Now, an hour of clarity for exhausted people of our nation mired in toxic partisanship. Left versus right, us versus them. While we pay to keep our politicians fighting, how do we, the people, rise up and solve the great challenges of our time? We do it by embracing freedom and liberty. There may be no such thing as a free lunch, but this hour is as close as it gets. Welcome to A Free Solution.
Welcome to A Free Solution. I'm Kevin Wilson here today, joined by Tim, the Freedom Variant O'Connor.
I'm here, brother. I am your co-host, your conspiracy theorist, and I mean, we've got stuff. We've got stuff to talk about.
We sure do. We're going to talk about shrinkflation. We're going to talk about the eclipse and
the eclipse.
The real story behind what's going on there.
Gotta leverage those human sacrifices, brother. That's the way it's going to be.
How it is. It's the best time. It's the best time. Mm-hmm. You know, like it's just efficiency, Tim.
It is. Yeah. So anyways, guys, it has been an interesting week in the news world. We've got some upcoming events that are pretty exciting. I've got a couple things that probably are going to surprise Kevin because I was kind of like, he's been awfully busy. So I'm kind of doing a little extra show prep, but I don't want to get him like, I want to surprise him with a couple things. There's some big stuff happening.
You
this
always
year,
keep
Kevin.
Me on my toes, man. Like I'm just I like do. Sometimes like what? All right, I don't know what you're talking about, but we're gonna learn about it together. I'm learning in the same way that you, the audience, are learning about things.
Okay? Yeah, and sometimes I make stuff up. Let's be honest, but I've got like this stuff is pretty real, like real as can be. But first, probably I don't know how you feel about this, like. We've avoided the subject a little bit, but I do think that I think because it's controversial and because there's not a clear-cut answer when we start talking about the Israel-Palestine conflict and what's going on over there, we've got a couple things that have happened. Like Israel, Kevin, I think Monday attacked the Iranian embassy in Damascus.
No,
Did you hear about that?
I heard something about it. I didn't read up on it. Like, I just saw someone mention it. I had no idea. I didn't know like what the details of were. All I saw was someone mentioning. I don't even know. I didn't even look in to see if it actually happened.
So that happened, and we could spend a few minutes on that. They hit some high profile targets of the Iranian military. They took out a couple generals. They took them out in Syria. It's an interesting turn of events.
Yeah.
I don't like war. I'm anti-war. I think that war in itself, in and of itself, is a beast, right, that we can't control, right? I don't like it. I see where this is going. I'm terrified, right? I'm terrified for this generation of kids who well, we make fun of them for being soft, but that's just normal, right? Like, that's just the adults in us saying, hey, kids. But I'm just afraid of them.
Going back, all the way back to, like, the times of the Greeks, right? Like every single generation has complained about how the current generation is soft. That's always.
They're going to be handed a world at war. Maybe I don't know. Like I'm terrified. Like I see increasing conflict going on, and I'm just terrified. Is not the right word. I'm angry. Right. I think that there's other solutions to these situations that we're not getting involved in. I'm tired of. The hostility, of animus, of oppression. I'm tired of it. I'm tired of the worldwide response that COVID is increasing poverty and I'm tired of terrorism. I'm wore out by it, man. It's bad. It's really, really bad. So I'm concerned, Kevin, what I see. And you know, so all right. So that covers that. I don't know, you wanna add any color commentary.
It's like throughout a thing, right? Let's just say, okay, Israel attacked an Iranian embassy in Damascus, right, in Syria.
Yeah.
So we'll break that down a little bit because you're worried about like these things spinning out. I mean, the fact that those are not new actors in this conflict necessarily, right? Like,
correct.
The Iranians have been, you know, giving weapons to Hamas. They've been openly supporting war against Israel. Iran has, like, you know, declared Israel an enemy. Like, they've been messing around in this region and, you know, poking Israel in the eye for a long time, right? They're also Iranians are also backing, like, the Houthis and messing with the ships in the Red Sea. Like, the Iranians are, like, they're trying to project power in the region, right? And mm-hmm. and I know, like, sometimes, like, the libertarian and then sometimes leftist conversation around this goes to, like, how is the U.S., like, causing this? Like, no, this is the Iranians messing around. They are right. trying to play empire, and they're going to get burned with it, right? Like, because there are going to be consequences to them messing with Israel. Israel knows this. And in the past, Israel has also said, okay, you're going to go try to make a nuclear weapon. We're going to go bomb you. Like, that's they bombed, you know, other countries in the Middle East because, like, they thought that they were getting close to making a weapon that could be used against them. So they said, okay, we're going to go be proactive about this. And so, like, again, my take on this is always, like, the U.S. should probably stay out. We're not going to really help by, like, getting more entangled in this stuff. However, you know, again, like, Iran is not an innocent party here either. I don't like seeing it, like, getting spinning out of control either, because these things can suddenly, like, okay, Iran's involved, and Iran's associated with Russia, and Russia's involved in Syria, and, you know, what the heck is China doing, and what's the U.S. doing in this situation? Like, it's one of those things, like on the eve of World War One, systems of alliances can suddenly, like, click into place, and suddenly the conflict gets much, much bigger. It goes from a regional conflict to a worldwide conflict.
Correct. So, I mean, what is the U.S. doing? We're funding Israel, and we sent them F-35s, the state-of-the-art fighter jets. We're not sending them, like, old artillery. We're not sending them. We're sending them the absolute best of the lethal aid that we have available. That's probably the right strategy. It's just, I don't know, man. Like, so, like I said, I think war is a beast. War is a something that is out of, like, things can spin out of control. Like you said, a small regional conflict sets the world on fire. And are there other answers to this? Is it Israel just can only project strength and can only beat Iran? And arguably, in a way, I buy that. But the only way out of this is Israel beating Iran and taking out the Houthis and straightening out this situation with violence. Is that?
I mean, you know, sometimes that is the case, right? Like, it's, you know, an awful situation where sometimes there are people who are determined to exterminate you, and the only way to defend yourself is with violence like that. Now,
yeah.
So there's times when Israel also does things to, it commits war crimes. Like, I'm not going to try to, like, sugarcoat this in any way. They commit, like, awful acts. There's the thing that happened with the aid workers.
Yeah.
Where, like, a whole convoy of them was killed, and it looks like it was, like, Israel confirmed that it was, like, their attack. They're trying to figure out why that happened, but, like, yeah, it's a terrible thing, and there's a lot, way too much of that that goes on, and you know, it's interesting because there's, like, a political movement in Israel to, like, become less constrained in the conflict, because there's some people who are, like, you know, why are you sending, you know, my sons and our daughters into this war zone to try to pick off people one by one? Just glass it, you know, just, like, eliminate that place. And that's a nasty, ugly impulse that is, you know, needs to be, like, kept in check. Like, it's how you lose your humanity.
It is how you lose your humanity. And I do think that the Israel-Palestine conflict, let's call it the Israel-Hamas conflict, because that's what it's supposed to be. There is a risk of losing our humanity here. And I'm going to refer to an Al Jazeera article for our listeners on WSL and for the people in the audience tonight. Israel has confirmed its forces killed 7 people from the World Central Kitchen charity in Gaza as they traveled in a convoy emblazoned with the charity's logo that had coordinated its movements with the Israeli military.
Yeah.
It's an absolute tragedy. I think that what it says to me is that I'm concerned about the limits and the moral tether on Israel as it's handling the situation in Palestine.
The situation in Gaza. I, you know, it, like that sort of stuff like needs to stop. And again, if the U.S. can do any good here, hopefully it's to say like, hey, for real, we will like stop supporting you in this if you don't like get it together and like act with some restraint in this situation. You know, if we could actually use, you know, our global hegemony and resources for good, I guess that's, you know, I guess it's better than using it for evil.
Yeah.
Right. I mean, which it unfortunately happens quite a bit, too. And again, it's the Hamas side of this is bad. Cause you always see this stuff coming out, like, you know, like with the Al-Shifa hospital stuff too. Like, okay, so, the Hamas government there was like, oh, Israel attacked this hospital again, right? They just like a wanton attack where they slaughtered people, you know, men, women, and children, et cetera. Then it kind of died down for a bit. The story died down. And then what ended up happening is like, oh, actually, Hamas fighters were using the hospital to, like, retreat to and to fire rockets from and basically use it as a way to, like, regroup and relaunch attacks on Israeli soldiers, which you are not allowed to do. You can't.
Yeah, and look, we have a question in the audience that I want to field, and I hope you want to field it, too. It's an awkward question, right? But so they're agreeing that this was a tragedy. But the dark closet of the mind from YouTube wants to know, is it acceptable to kill 30 innocent people to get one Hamas fighter? And, I mean, that's the real question. That's a really, I mean, at its heart, that's the question that needs to be asked. At what point do we say, I want to say no, right? Like, I want to say
like,
no.
Like, you and I in normal situations say no. And, like, but what ends up happening, like, practically on the field is, like, okay, you know, the Hamas militants will surround themselves with, you know, innocent bystanders. Like, by for example, you know, launching attacks from a hospital. And then Israel says, like, well, we really need to stop these people from killing us. And then they make the calculus that that is worth doing. And then they do it. And then they say, oh, look at all these innocent people Israel killed. And that is accurate. Like, they did kill innocent people.
They did.
And like, okay, you know, that's it. But they made that calculus say, okay, like, the only way we're going to stop these bad people from hurting us is by killing innocent people. And that's not the calculus to make.
Yeah, that's a weird moral calculus. It's a strange moral equivocation that I don't know.
And
long term, Kevin, the implications.
No.
And there's the question, right?
Facebook user, how many will become Hamas fighters because they instantly killed? And that's like, it's explicitly part of the Hamas' strategy to do this. They say, you know, like, everyone who dies is a martyr, right? Like, that's how they treat it. And then they use that to recruit. But again, they put their civilians in situations where they're more likely to die. And then they use that as propaganda to recruit more fighters.
Right.
So, you know, like, that's a pretty awful thing to do, too. Like, should not be doing that.
No, it should. I feel like there's got to be another way around it. I feel like the Palestinians, this is a real thing, right? Like, the Palestinians have been held as a sword at Israel's throat. There's many, many problems, including, you know, Benjamin Netanyahu and the Likud party funding Hamas to get them in power, because that would minimize the chances of a two-state solution. Now, there's a real problem here, and I want it fixed. I want a solution, and I want it soon, right? Like, as an American, I'm saying, how do we impose our hegemony to fix this situation, right? Like, playing both sides of the fence, that's what we always do.
That is kind of what the American strategy is. Okay, we're providing aid to Israel, or like military aid to Israel, and
lethal aid, and like, food aid, right?
And food aid to the Palestinians, right? That like the U.S. government, like even though like it got spun in a really weird way, but the U.S. government like built basically a new sea dock in Gaza to be able to get aid, which is I think it might have been part of that aid package that was related to the attack on the aid convoy as well.
But I believe it was. Yes. It's like, yeah. Okay.
So
great.
Like they built it. So it did get, it spun into a weird thing, and this is like the weird like lefty Twitter where like everything is an offense and everything is like America participating in genocide with Israel and stuff, where they're like, oh, look at the American government giving MREs to like these like poor Palestinians, like garbage food. And it's like, no, MREs are actually like, you know, they're practical food. It's not like gourmet, but it's calorie dense, you know, again, MRE meal ready to eat. Like you're, this is what we feed to the American military out in the field. Like it's good quality stuff. And people are like, oh, like they're feeding them garbage. You can't eat this. And like, oh, what?
It's calorie dense. And it's critical food at a time when food is scarce right now. The UN is offering reports that nutrition is at an all time. A problem with nutrition exists in Gaza is at an all time high. Like it's real.
It's what it is. Right. Yeah.
I've had MREs like it. They're fun. It like they're delicious in a way. Like not like would I want to live off of them forever? No. I'm blessed to live in America, man. I can get what food I want. You know.
Yeah. We used to take them. Like sometimes we for one of our Boy Scout hikes that was like a couple day hike like through the woods at a couple stops. We used MREs for some of those just because we wanted like nice calorie dense meals, and it's good for that. And they got the little things you pour the water in them. And they heat them up, everything too.
Yeah, that was where I got mine. Was at a Boy Scout's birthday party, and he's like, "You know what? I want everybody. The food we're gonna have is MREs." And I had taken my kids, and they're like, "So I had a couple of MREs. Like, what? I'll tell you what. I think I had two though. Like, my kids didn't really like it, so I ate like mine and theirs because there was not a ton of food there." Facebook user, it's got to be Thomas Daniel Queter. We don't even feed our homeless as good as MREs. Like they are nutrient dense. They are calorie dense. You know, it's okay, right? Like they're okay. It's something, and they're compact, and you know,
that was transports like a well. Thing that too. Like that was also to get aid in immediately. There's like I forget what the acronym for it, but there's another type of food that's like, you know, a basic food ration type of thing that they started sending in afterwards. That's a little bit like lower cost. But they have like, you know, diet appropriate, like even like halal appropriate, like basic food stuff that they send in bulk to try to, you know, get people to be able to survive, to prevent people from starving.
Yeah. And look, no matter what, at the end of the day, Dark Closet of the Mind brings up another point that I like to talk about when it comes to funding military engagements. It will only end when it stops being profitable. And there is a morality, there is a justice, but there is a reality that war makes lots and lots of people lots and lots of money. From campaign coffers getting filled to the military industrial complex generating revenue. Like, I mean, it's absolutely real.
I don't know. I think that's like a little bit too simplistic. Like, there's a lot of wars that went on for ideological reasons, like well beyond anyone making any money off of it, right? Like it was like a war for survival, war for extermination, war for, you know, ridiculous ideologies because they thought they could be profitable at the end. Like the Civil War was like that. They thought that they would be profitable if they could keep their economic system intact after the Civil War. But like it wasn't. It was absolutely devastating to every single aspect of the South. Like no one was making money off of that. I mean, like a couple people were, but like, Not the political leadership who was making the decisions. It was ideological, and like don't discount the role of ideology in allowing people to make stupid decisions that would kill millions of people. Right.
Like, all right. So look, your comment's fair. I think that my thoughts are fair as well. And I think in this modern day and age, a lot of times these decisions look really, really look like they're incentivized like through money. Like when politicians are bragging about how the military industrial complex makes great jobs all over the country, and so that's how we grow GDP or something, like it's offensive to me, Kevin. You know what I mean? Like we've talked about it's
before. McConnell like making his pitch for Ukraine aid, and like, well, it creates jobs. Okay.
Yeah. It's gross.
It creates jobs does not mean it's good.
Right. It's a gross angle to take. I don't like it. You appeal to my sense of morality, appeal to my sense of justice. I get closer to agreeing. But when you get to it makes good jobs. It's like, that's what I was afraid of. You know, that's what I was afraid of.
You want
it makes good votes for me.
Repeal some regulations. Like,
right.
Do it. Like,
let people do business. You know what I mean? Like, come on, man. We're really at.
One more quick comment before we go to break. Facebook user says, send me an F-35. I think they're
$100 million.
Yeah, listen, you got to get a permit for that, right?
Yeah.
You get your 15 license, like, you know, I'm sure the government will allow you to purchase one for, you know, $100.
It's about $100 million. $100 million.
All right. Well, on that note, folks, we are going to head to break. Thanks again for joining us here on A Free Solution. We'll be back in just a few minutes. Talk to you soon.
Introducing a sobering and unavoidable truth. The latest advancements in artificial intelligence have made cyber attacks easier than ever before. Cyber criminals are relentlessly targeting your business right now, seeking the tiniest opening in your defenses to drain your accounts and steal sensitive data. Your finances and your customers' trust are on the line. Call the experts at Simple Tech Innovations now at 585-999-TECH to secure your business today. Don't wait until it's too late. Make the call today, 585-999-TECH.
Hey, this is Kevin Wilson, host of A Free Solution. You ever need a tool for just one project, but didn't want to spend the cash for something you'd use just once or twice? Well, there's a new tool library in Rochester where you can borrow just the thing you need instead of buying a new one. It's called the Tool Shed from the Southeast Area Coalition, and membership starts at just $25 a year. Use it for home projects or to support your business. Learn more and become a member at seektoolshed.org. That's S-E-A-C toolshed.org.
In 1926, the Avon Fire Department put an Aaron's Fox pumper into service. It now sits fully restored in a museum near Toronto. Avon has an opportunity to bring the Fox home for its 100th birthday for a fraction of its appraised value. The Aaron's Fox Full Circle Preservation Society needs your help. Look us up on Facebook or call 615-6463. Let's bring home the Fox.
A Free Solution on the WYSL stations.
Welcome back to A Free Solution. I'm Kevin Wilson here today, joined by Tim, the Freedom Baron O'Connor.
I'm here, Kevin. And I'm telling you, it's just a wild time. Like, I kind of dumped one on you right ahead of the show, and I wasn't sure if you were familiar with it or not. But let's put it out there. Our benevolent overlords are going to, Kevin, they wrote an Inflation Reduction Act. They are now going to write a Shrinkflation Reduction Act. They've got our best interests.
I can't believe this is a real thing. I haven't read about this, like, because I've been trying to stay off Twitter and focusing on like being a good father and taking care of my child. And like, I felt a lot of joy from that. Thanks for dragging me back down into the mud, Tim.
Look, man, I'm telling you right now, Bob Casey, look, I wanted to kind of play with you about it. I wanted to kind of like drag it out. But there's a certain amount of malicious incompetence that is very real. That Bob Casey from, he's a Democrat senator, apparently, has introduced the Shrinkflation Prevention Act of 2024. His opening comments: over the past few years, greedflation has fueled rising costs facing American families. Greedflation occurs when corporations use inflation as a cover for price increases, inflating their own profits in the process. In fact, Federal Reserve data indicates that from 2020 to 2022, corporate profits rose by 75%, five times as fast as inflation. Like, this guy is playing fast and loose with the numbers, and he's lost his freaking mind. But anyways, shrinkflation, one tactic to hike prices and increase profit, occurs when corporations reduce product size, without lowering the price in a commensurate way. So look, shrinkflation is real. That's something that's really happening.
Yeah. It's a real thing, right? Like we'll acknowledge that. Like some products get smaller because it gets more expensive for them to produce that product. So instead of raising prices, they just, you know, take off a couple ounces of a drink or you know, a few ounces away from the box or something, right?
Yeah. I discovered OxiClean late last year. And since I discovered it, A, it's gone up about $3 in price and lost about 5 ounces in the package. Like, I'm just like, man. Anyway, so Bob Casey, again, goes further, of course. Like, they don't just stop. Shrinkflation is squeezing families' budgets across the nation. And so, look, guys, on his introduction of the Shrinkflation Prevention Act, he has Gatorade shrinking its drink volume from 32 to 28 ounces, and Cocoa Puffs from 19.3 ounces to 18.1 ounces. Now, I want to be honest, neither one of those products has any appeal to me.
Gatorade?
No, I don't like Gatorade. It gives me heartburn.
Oh man, that's a good Gatorade too. The Frost. But here, listen, you want to beat the inflation on Gatorade? Buy the powder. It's so cheap. Like that's what right. I do. I buy the powder. It's like $8 for like 30 gallons of it. Like,
so what? This is like smoke and mirrors.
To that point, okay. There's a comment on YouTube. Dark Clausemann says the market will correct for that. We can vote with our dollar. If we don't buy it, then you know they'll need to adjust. Yeah, that's it.
Nails it.
So you do, and which is what I did too. Like, because I'm like, man, it's way too much for like this little bottle of Gatorade. I'm not going to buy like a 6-pack of this. Oh, here's powder. I'm still buying the Gatorade, but like it's cheaper, right? I'll switch to another product. You know, whatever.
You shouldn't, Kevin. You shouldn't be forced to switch from your favorite product. What you need is a benevolent, like a law. And guys, how could they enforce this law? What I think billions of dollars in a new agency, which in fact will continue to contribute to devaluation of the dollar, which guys may in fact be the source of inflation that we've been facing for these years, right? Like
it may very well be. So two things. One, I want to say the specific solutions that he lays out. So he says direct FTC to promulgate regulations to establish shrinkflation as an unfair or deceptive act or practice prohibiting manufacturers from engaging in shrinkflation. Authorize FTC to pursue civil actions against corporations who engage in shrinkflation. Authorize state attorneys general to bring civil actions against corporations engaging in shrinkflation. So
he doesn't even really have to pass a law. He just passes the buck to a regulatory agency.
FTC, you've been going nuts anyway. Like, get them.
Yeah, go get them.
But there's a lot of problems with this. But one of them is that, A, it doesn't actually address the core issue, as you pointed out. Inflation has a lot of sources, and a lot of it is the government. This doesn't actually address this. It's not going to solve the inflation issue because shrinkflation is a reaction to – like rising prices that corporations are seeing too, right? So they're just trying to maintain their profitability. Again, I see nothing that is neutral to me. It's neither good nor bad that corporations are trying to make money. That's what they do. They're trying to make a living.
Right.
And the thing is, though, like the way this is set up, no company could end up shrinking the sizes of their products, right? Like, I mean, it's just like, imagine if like you couldn't shrink the size of like your 64 ounce like colas that you're serving in stores that like places like New York City went after because like that would be shrinkflation. Oh yeah. Like, sorry, we're going to discontinue the 64 ounce and we're going to only have 32 ounces, but now the 32 ounces are the same price. Like, oh, shrinkflation. No,
Kevin, it sounds to me like you don't trust our better angels in government. Like that they simply don't have our best interests at heart. When in fact, with laws like this, they're demonstrating that they do.
Yeah. That's they certainly do. I mean, again, we're going to have laws contradicting each other here, right? Like, do you want to shrink the products or grow the products? I don't know. Like, we got someone talking about like profitable diabetes epidemic. Okay, well, like, you know how you can prevent that? You shrink the sodas, right?
That's
like, less diabetes. Shrinkflation is going to cure obesity. Like, thank you, corporations.
I mean, inflation will, as Venezuela noted, inflation will, it will cure obesity on some level. Absolutely.
No. But the other, like, the fundamental, like, misunderstanding about, like, shrinkflation, right, is that, like, the senator from Pennsylvania calling it, like, greedflation. Like, oh, like, as if corporations only, like, either raise prices, which is the other thing they're accusing them of like, raising prices of goods, or shrinking prices, or shrinking goods while keeping the price the same to pursue greed. But what happens when prices are going down? Because a lot of goods, like, either fluctuate in price, or sometimes they just, like, they go down over time because there's more competition. It's cheaper to source the materials, and, like, they're able to sell more at volume by lowering prices. Like, what happens when that – did corporations suddenly get less greedy when the prices of TVs went down? No. No, they didn't. They're still the same exact level of greedy. It's just that they can't get away with selling TVs at a higher price because there's more competition in the market to sell this stuff. And now I can buy, like, a 55-inch TV for, like, $300 if I want to.
Competition is overrated, Kevin. Like, we us libertarians talk about competition like it's the be all end all, solve all the problems. Without better angels in government, this is going to be impossible. That's it.
These folks who are doing that. There's actually another one I heard about today related to shrinkflation, but is so there's this old 1930s like law that basically makes it so that, like, manufacturers of food are supposed to sell food at the same price to, like, at all of their buyers, right? So, like, grocery stores aren't able to really negotiate for better prices. It's called the Robinson-Patman Act, right?
Okay.
And so this law is passed in the 1930s, basically to go after, like, A&P. Which was a huge grocery chain at the time. And now the FTC, Linda Kahn, our two God happy friends her. Over there, they want to, like, start to revive this act too, to protect small grocery stores and say, because small grocery stores aren't able to negotiate as good of a price with, say, you know, like the Gatorades and the Cocoa Puffs and all that stuff. So they have to price things a bit higher than, say, Walmart. And so now they want to, like, make things equal. Now, you might ask yourself, like, again, that stinks for those grocery stores. But you might ask yourself, well, what happens if bigger grocery chains can't negotiate prices on, like, bulk purchases of goods anymore? Well, the place where most of us buy our stuff, their food's going to get more expensive. That's what's going to happen. Again, it's you come out with this thing to say, oh, we want to help these, like, smaller businesses. And what you end up with is most Americans paying more for food, right?
Yeah. Yeah, that's what's going to happen. And then, as the average weight of the American citizen goes down, they will thank themselves for taking the bull by the horns and solving the obesity epidemic.
Yeah.
Like, you
thank
know,
you,
like,
government. Now that sure, I can't afford food, I don't need to pay for that expensive Ozempic anymore. I can just, you know, they just have the discipline to not buy food anymore. Because
that's
I can't afford it.
Beautiful. Yeah, no, that's beautiful. And that is beautiful.
And hey, listen, I don't want to. The Republicans are also trying to solve the obesity problem with tariffs. Mm-hmm. Because, you know, Donald Trump, he wants to impose a 10% tariff on everything. Like, just across the board, 10% tariff. Let's just, like, it is a 10% tax on everything. So all the stuff, you know, your goods and services, your goods that you buy from overseas, your electronics, your, you know, machines, in some food as well. 10% tariff on all of that. What do you think that's going to do to inflation, Tim? Like, what's going to happen there?
We're all going to end up with being able to buy less stuff. The value of our dollar is going to get destroyed. The thing about tariffs, like, I had a conversation with a guy. Like, what does the government do with the money that they get from tariffs? What do they do with that money? It doesn't net out to a positive. We go further and further in debt every single year. Just let us trade with other people. Just let us do our thing, and everything is going to be better. I do have a solution coming up, Kevin, in the next part of the show to this whole food's getting more expensive. 2024 is going to be a big, big year. It's going to be a cataclysmic event. People are going to have, all over the Southeast, are going to have free food everywhere.
Oh, Well, okay. Well, we'll
everywhere, man.
I look forward to that next time. We got like we got a couple more minutes in this one, and I want to bring up, you know, I think it was Queter again on Facebook says your medications are also going to get more expensive, and he says Medicare is set to spend 22% more this year. I mean, there's again same with like it's price controls on pharmaceuticals are actually kind of causing some of this too. Like it ends up being a thing where okay, like importing stuff is more expensive, and regulations are getting expensive on this stuff, and then price controls end up limiting like the effect of like research and development to have new and less expensive medications come out. Now, it's one of those things where it's well intentionally. Oh, we don't want this new stuff to come out and people not to be able to afford it, and then like you know. People aren't able to survive or have as good of quality of life because new medications come out, right? But what ends up happening, right? The pharmaceutical industry puts money into making something. They charge a high price for it. They make their money back over 10 years. And then eventually the patent expires on this stuff and the generics come out and then it becomes cheap. Sure. But people only see the first part to say, oh, it's so expensive the first few years, right? Well, okay. What would you rather have? Expensive medication, new medication coming out all the time, but it's expensive for a few years, and then it's cheap later on, or that medication not existing at all.
Well, what I would prefer, Kevin, is one of the areas where it drives me a little bit crazy is that because we don't have a free flow of medicine across borders, they are selling the exact same drugs in Mexico or France or Spain at a much lower price than what they sell them to the American citizen for. And so again, these tariffs and these regulations and these import restrictions hurt American consumers. The price would equalize over the entire world.
Yeah.
But what we have now is a drastic price-controlled market for the American citizen. And other countries are benefiting from how much we pay because of this lack of free trade when it comes to medicine. So I understand the patent protection. That's fine. But let's equalize it throughout the world, right? With this new, like, I don't know, a lot of libertarians get crazy over intellectual property. I'm not one of them.
We could have a whole other debate. We got like 30 seconds left. Maybe we'll do a little mini debate on that. But like, because we do have to head to break. Thanks again for joining us here on A Free Solution. We're going to be back in just a few minutes. Talk to you soon.
Introducing a sobering and unavoidable truth. The latest advancements in artificial intelligence have made cyber attacks easier than ever before. Cyber criminals are relentlessly targeting your business right now, seeking the tiniest opening in your defenses to drain your accounts and steal sensitive data. Your finances and your customers' trust are on the line. Call the experts at Simple Tech Innovations now at 585-999-TECH to secure your business today. Don't wait until it's too late. Make the call today, 585-999-TECH.
To live the quality of life we deserve in truth and freedom, informed by our Constitution, our laws, and traditions, we need to pick the best leaders possible. Recent experience certainly illustrates that. Free and accurate elections are essential if we're going to restore our society and safeguard our rights. New York Citizens Audit is a volunteer, nonpartisan group which has been lobbying for open-source audits of the State Board of Elections and reform of the electoral process statewide. Did you know Citizens Audit has uncovered over 1 million felony violations of election law, that in 2020 there were 625,000 more voter registrations than existing voting age citizens in just six New York counties, that there were 338,000 more votes cast than voters who voted. These are just a few shocking examples of the urgent need for reform. You can help. Visit auditny.com and learn the facts, how to volunteer and make a difference in your community. Again, volunteer, donate, or spread the word. Start at auditny.com. That's auditny.com.
A Free Solution on the WYSL stations.
welcome back to A Free Solution. I'm Kevin Wilson today, joined by Tim, the Freedom Variant O'Connor.
I'm here, Kevin. And look, like I said before, the break, we'll deal with that one later. Let's talk about the fact that governments all over the country are declaring states of emergency because of a solar eclipse. Or is it a lunar eclipse? I don't even know.
The solar eclipse.
Is it a solar? Okay.
The moon is going to go over the sun and block out the sun.
The moon's going over the sun. The moon is not going to travel 93 million miles. What are you talking about?
So relative to their positions in the sky, it's about the same size. Going to block it out. It's going to make it dark.
Oh, okay. All right. So it's going to be Earth, moon, sun.
Yes.
Which only happens, I guess, never or every 2,000 years or 30,000 years.
Well, it's not quite that rare. Like the next one in the Rochester region is going to be like 2144. So it's going to be a bit. One.
Yeah, I might miss that one. I'm going to be kind of in the path of this one. I've been driving on like I-88 and I had a trip down the thruway. I just want to thank Governor Kathy Hochul for the messages on the signs saying, please drive careful on April 8th, solar eclipse. What do you think?
I mean, of all the things to do with government resources, like a sign saying drive careful is fine. Like, I'm not mad at that.
Yeah, no, I actually like, okay. Because look,
quick side note on that. Pete Buttigieg wants to ban like clever signs like that. Like on St. Patrick's Day, they had don't push your luck, drive sober, right? Like that. Those are the signs in my area, which. Like,
okay. Wild.
Fine. Yeah. Like. Okay. Like.
Controversial.
Whatever. Yeah. Like, I do not care about that. Like. Okay. Yeah. Like driving sober. Yeah. We should do that. I guess that's fine to put that in a sign. I don't know if it's actually doing much, but like, it's fine. People would just
don't tell me what to do, bro.
Yeah. I mean that. I need to find it. There's like a New York State agency too. I'll bring it back to the eclipse where they're, you know, they're talking about don't wear your eclipse glasses while driving. And
oh my God! All right.
Okay. Even like my initial response is like, you know, don't tell me what to do, government. Like, I'll do what I want. If I want to wear super dark sunglasses while driving, like I'm going to do it.
Honestly, I'm going to wear two pairs just to prove
just
them.
To spite them.
Just to show them they can't tell me what to do. So look, arguably there is a solar eclipse. It looks very exciting. You and I have made some jokes about human sacrifices and how to leverage that out during a solar eclipse.
There's just so much area to cover. You got lots of human sacrificing space.
Right. Perhaps they should put that on the sign.
Yeah.
That this information is inaccurate. Please do not commit human sacrifices during a solar eclipse. It does nothing.
If you just tell people like, hey, stop, don't do the illegal thing. Like, they won't do it. Like, just ask them nicely. It's all you got to do.
Yeah. So, I mean, that's it for the solar eclipse. I do, because I know
people are like, why are they calling out the National Guard? You know, like, why are people declaring states of emergency? I'll actually, like, defend this, like, a little bit. Like the Niagara County doing it, like, probably maybe not fully necessary. But I get some of the small towns doing it. Like, there's, like, Tim, have you ever been to, like, a town where the only grocery store for, like, 50 minutes is, like, a Big M? And there's like just nothing else around.
Kevin, that's every town in Otsego County.
Exactly. Right. So like you're familiar, right? Like, you know.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
And so like imagine like there's a bunch of these like small towns that are in the path of the eclipse. And a bunch of people are traveling from all over the country and converging in these like small towns to try to go look at the eclipse. So that's why the governments are issuing statements like go and stock up on food, get your food, get your water, you know, be prepared for traffic because like this town that is used to, you know, 300 cars a day passing through it is suddenly going to have 5,000 people in it or 10,000 people in it. And that's going to be kind of a big deal. So I get why they're having a National Guard on standby to be like, okay, like let's, if there's a big accident or something, like we have extra people on hand to clear it, or if there's a medical event and we can't get people out, like, okay, like what do we do? And if the food runs out, it's a legitimate issue for places where like there really is nothing for a while around. Like it's not as big of a deal. Even in New York, like most of the time you're not usually more than like an hour and a half from like something, but there are other parts, like you go out to like Oklahoma where it's really a few hour drive to like get to stuff.
Yeah. And on that note too, like, look, there is a reality that millions and millions of people, literally numbers that are almost unheard of, are going to be traveling that day to see the eclipse. Like places along the path of the eclipse booked solid. I took my wife to a little like lodge this last weekend. No one's there but us. There's like all the other rooms are open. They're like, but next week, starting on Sunday, we are booked. And this place was like, you know, kind of nice and pretty expensive. And they upped their rates. They came up with this package for the solar eclipse. So yes, there is something to be like prepared for.
Price gap.
Lots of people in your area. If you're close to the actual
I gotta ask, should the government do something about this? Should the government control the prices of hotels and Airbnbs during the eclipse?
Well, to protect like us from inflation and stuff like that.
Right? Yeah, exactly. Like these greedy price gougers think they can get away with charging extra high prices during a, you know, once in a lifetime event. How dare they? Those greedy corporations, the hotels, think they can charge $1,000 a night, which is legitimately a thing in Rochester and Buffalo.
Awesome.
Is it like the hotel prices are wild out here? They think they can get away with it. Kathy Hochul ought to do something about this. She ought to fix this problem.
Yeah, listen, I paid $100 when I came out and visited you that one time, and I felt ripped off. Like, Rochester wasn't. I'm just kidding. I'm joking, man. Rochester was cool. We had a good time.
It's fair. You only made it out to Henrietta. Next time you're out here, I'm going to have to, like, show you around. We'll get you into the city. There's a waterfall in the city. You probably won't get stabbed. It's fine.
All right. Well, you said city, and I'm already like, I don't know.
But
not for me.
And I know, like, someone's asking, Dark Claws of Mine on YouTube's asking, do you think the eclipse will be a dud event for Rochester or cash cow? I mean,
cash cow.
People are probably still going to make money. Now, is it going to be cloudy and are we going to see nothing? Like, who knows?
Probably.
Probably.
But look, the people are coming from all over the world for this thing to be along the path. And New York has a lot of travel hubs. Rochester has, you know, Western New York has lots of places where people can fly into. It's going to be a big event, like, as far as people being around for it.
Yeah.
Kevin, I've got some good news on the food front, though.
Okay.
I just want people to be prepared. Get some plastic bags. Get ready. This year, 2024, Kevin, the convergence of the 13-year cycle and the 17-year cycle, cicadas are coming out huge, man. Quadrillions of them, perhaps. Like, not since Thomas Jefferson was president have we had a cicada event like this.
Listen,
I'm not kidding. It's real, Kevin. It's real.
Okay, here's the thing. I feel like we've done this every year now for like 5 years.
Well, like, perhaps.
Like, I feel like I might be over the cicada hype because like we keep doing this. We're like, oh yeah, this is Brood X. You know, like, it was the biggest brood. It's the noisiest brood. Like, there's going to be so many cicadas everywhere. And I'm like, okay,
sure.
And, like, in some places, yeah, I get there's a bunch. You know, I saw like, you know, like I visited my friend down in Maryland, like after they had like one of the big cicada things, and there's, you know, cicada like husks all over like trees and everything. Like, it's a thing, but like, every year, like, we want to like hype up the big cicada event. Now, you want to, if it is big and there's a whole bunch of them around, and you know, you want to scoop them up and throw them in a deep fryer. I hear they make good tacos. Tim, we can eat the bugs.
We can eat these bugs. Honestly, the article I'm referring to recommends that you at least try them. But it's Kevin, this is the overlap of Brood 19 and Brood 13. Oh. Okay. Brood 19, it comes out every 13 years. Brood 13 comes out every 17 years. And we are, like, I mean, I don't want to try to oversell this because literally it's going to be in the Southeast and not affect us at all.
Yeah,
but by God, if you're in the Southeast out there, this is going to be the way to supplement your food bill. You can just walk around, scoop these bad boys up, throw them in a bag, put them in your freezer, fill your freezer with cicadas. Like, and maybe you'll have an impact on the noise level that they make, because apparently it's going to be like a jet engine in every neighborhood all over the Southeast.
They do make a ruckus. Like, if you've never like where cicadas are really, really prominent, they're noisy.
This is, I mean, according to the scientists, which nobody believes scientists anymore, but according to the scientists that track these things, again, this is 225 years, 200 years, something like that. Thomas Jefferson was alive the last time this particular brood hatch overlapped. It doesn't, I mean, 13 years and 17 years, you can see that mathematically, it would be unlikely for them to overlap with any kind of regularity, intuitively speaking.
Right. Listen, yeah, I'm not a mathematician. I'm sure someone could tell me like how often that is, and there's probably a formula for figuring that out that I definitely forgot about, because I'm not using that kind of math on a regular basis anymore.
Yeah, no, there's definitely math like involved, which is very confusing for a lot of people. That's for sure.
But also, again, I'm sure this is queer again. I feed them to my chickens and make eggs. It's a great idea, actually. Like, scoop them a bunch. Like, I've seen people do that. I saw that on TikTok with some of the other broods. They just like scooped them up and like threw them in their like chest freezer and then just start handing them out to their chickens. As a treat over the course of a year.
Yeah, well, honestly, I would try cicadas. I would try them deep fried. I would try them however you want to make them.
Someone else this time. It wasn't quick. Listen, WYSL, I keep referring to these folks like who comment on Facebook, but I can't see what any of their pictures are in their Facebook group. It just says Facebook users. So sometimes I'm just taking a guess.
Yeah. That's all right. Kevin, Leave It Blank campaign gets 12% of the vote in New York Democratic presidential primary. In New York City, Kevin, about 15% of Democratic primary voters did not vote for any of the three candidates on the ballot.
Yeah.
Joe Biden still won handily. And look, this does not mean that 22% of or 15% of New York City Democrats are all of a sudden going to be voting Libertarian, but
no, they're not even going to be voting Green. Like they're gonna, right.
Wait, so no, like they're going to vote for Biden.
They're going to vote for Biden. Like, I know it's the thing because they're trying to send a message to Joe Biden that like if you don't stop supporting Israel, then we won't vote for you. Most of them are going to vote for Joe Biden.
They are,
and
at the end of the day,
yeah. It's
those lies and the bifurcation of their brain and the manipulation, the emotional manipulation and the emotional infancy that they're stuck in. They will still fall back and vote for this guy.
Yeah.
And I'm not saying the choice has to be between him and Trump. The choice shouldn't be between just him and Trump.
No. And it doesn't even just apply to this election, right? Like we've seen it in the past with other elections where like, hey, like we're really frustrated with who might otherwise be our preferred candidate, whether it's Democrat or Republican. In this case, some Democrats are frustrated with Biden. In the past, some Republicans have been frustrated with Trump. But you end up getting so scared of the other person. You end up, you know, they say, well, what if Trump wins? What if Biden wins? Like, I can't vote third party because then, you know, the other guy might win. And that happened in New York State gubernatorial elections too, like a couple of times. Like, well, I was going to vote for Larry Sharp, but like, what if Andrew Cuomo wins? I got to vote for Mark Molinaro. I got to vote for him, you know? And then last time too, Lee Zeldin and Hochul, like, same thing, you know, it's.
Look, man, like people, I still hear it now. People are excited by the fact that Trump is within 10% of Biden in New York State. I'm like, those guys don't understand math, because people were like crowing about a poll that came out that said Lee Zeldin was within 4% of Kathy Hochul. And I'm like, that's an insurmountable lead. Yeah. And it's a lie. Like, first of all, it's not 4%. But second of all, that's insurmountable. You're not getting past 4% of all the people that vote in this state, like a million voters, right? You're not getting past that. You're living in a fantasy land, and they're all like, people are coming at me hard because I'm like,
I mean, weirder stuff will happen, but like, it was unlikely. Like, without like some big scandal or something, it was unlikely, right? So Well, on that note, though, we do have to do head to a break, so we can continue this discussion afterwards, though. So WYSL audience, if you want to hear what we're saying afterwards, we're going to talk about a couple other things too. Someone brought up RFK, so maybe we'll talk about him again.
Let's do that.
But yeah, we're gonna keep the podcast going. Thanks again, WYSL audience, for joining us on the Free Solution. Have a great night, folks. Take care.